bad all over.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. In this economy, there's no place to hide. No company is immune. No industry is safe from the fallout. I have three examples this morning. Dow Chemical said it's going to close 20 plants, cut 5,000 jobs, and sell off businesses to save money. In Britain, an auto parts maker named Wagon has filed for the British equivalent of bankruptcy. Then there's the newspaper business. And again, nobody's immune. Not the New York Times, not the Chicago Tribune. Here's Marketplace's Dan Gretsch.
Reports say the Tribune Company, owner of 23 TV stations and 12 newspapers, could declare bankruptcy as early as this week. The company is drowning in debt. Real estate mogul Sam Zell borrowed billions to take the Tribune private a year ago, but as cash flow has declined, the company now teeters on default. Sri Srinivasan is Dean of Student Affairs at Columbia Journalism School. He says several U.S. cities could lose their newspapers in the coming year.
Change in the news business is constant, and we have seen that for decades and decades. What we've not seen is the kind of immense anxiety across the country like we're seeing now.
The Gray Lady is also feeling that anxiety. The New York Times said today it plans to borrow $225 million against its new Manhattan headquarters. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
It looks like most governments plan to spend their way out of this recession. Over the weekend, Barack Obama said he wants the biggest public works program in decades. It could cost $500 billion or more. In Europe, China, India, Australia, the governments have all laid plans for a spending spree. The stock markets seem to like the approach. So far, the Dow is up 262 points, about 3% to 8,897. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are both up about 3% so far. Big gains in Asia today, 5% in Japan, 8% for Hong Kong, and European shares are up 5 to 7% so far. It looks like Detroit's car makers will get a bailout, probably $15 billion or so in loans. But that money will have strings attached. Senator Chris Dodd says GM CEO Rick Wagner has to go. Congress might also create cabinet-level oversight of the automakers. And some people want even more. Here's Steve Henn.
David Friedman at the Union of Concerned Scientists says if automakers are asking for taxpayer money, taxpayers should get something in return. What he wants is for American manufacturers to promise to meet new fuel efficiency standards 3 years ahead of schedule.
If they did that, consumers would have more efficient cars, and we would save $30 billion between now and 2025.
But the Bush administration's proposed rating, a $25 billion loan program that was intended to help carmakers make that switch, and instead using the cash for a broader industry bailout. Environmentalists and many Democrats hate that idea, and a stalemate's still possible. Robert Schultz is an auto industry analyst at S&P.
If absolutely nothing happens into early January with General Motors, they'd be at that point where they'd have to face bankruptcy.
Schultz says if Washington does nothing, all three firms could face the same fate within months. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Monday, December 8th on Marketplace.org. The job losses are getting to be scary. 500,000 layoffs in November alone. But that's just a number. There are people behind those numbers, and a lot of them need some help. Nancy Marshall Genzer has more.
It's not easy being unemployed in this economy. Maurice Emsalem is with the National Employment Law Project.
People end up cutting back on food. They end up losing their housing, moving in with family and friends, losing their cars.
Emsalem says long-term unemployment is growing, so retraining is critical. Legislation now stalled in Congress would help. The Unemployment Insurance Modernization Act would give states billions to expand benefits and training. Economist Carrie Leahy of Decision Economics agrees something needs to be done, but he says unemployment shouldn't be too appealing.
If you know you're going to get aid for a long period of time, you're going to take your time finding the right jobs.
Still, he says the legislation is a step in the right direction because it encourages retraining. The bill has passed the House, but not the Senate. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
It's not all big in Texas. In tiny Oakwood, only a handful of businesses remain, including a gas station, a general store, and perhaps America's smallest bank. Kate Archer-Kent of Red River Radio reports.
How y'all doing?
Oakwood State Bank customers don't need account numbers when they approach the iron bars of the teller windows. Just their name will do. For the most part, 84-year-old Roddy Wiley Jr. runs the bank just like his daddy did more than a century ago. And he likes it that way.
We got an antique bank. We run by antiques because everybody in here is 70 or above.
He has 600 or so customers don't seem to mind Wiley's yesteryear approach to banking. Then again, they don't really have a choice. It's the only bank for 15 miles. But there are advantages. Most transactions are settled with a handshake, and customers often need nothing more than a familiar face to get a loan.
Some of them that we know real well. Unless they get on up, we don't require collateral.
Like what kind of money are we talking about?
Well, $1,200 to $1,500. Which would be a little for you, but big for here.
63-year-old Jonathan Hodges has banked here since he was a boy. He remembers withdrawing a nickel a day for BB pellets. He says even today, withdrawals are expected to come with an explanation.
The only thing is, you got to be kind of careful because everybody knows your business.
Wiley's right hand at the bank is Leela Coates. She's worked here for more than 50 years. Inside the vault, she points out the handwritten ledgers and microfilm still in use. The manual check-canceling machine is vital to her job. Its perforations spell out paid.
It's been here ever since I've been here, so it must have come over on the Mayflower. That's what we tell everybody when they talk about some of our old equipment. What you need to see now is the coin machine that throws out the change.
That would be the Brandt Automatic Cashier, circa 1920, an ornate metal contraption with dozens of keys.
75 cents worth, I'll punch.
It's inevitable. The modern world will catch up with the bank. Wiley says when he gets too old, he'll probably sell to one of the big regional banks. In the meantime, resiliency rules here. Even the clock on the wall keeps ticking after someone shot through the window and the bullet lodged in the clock face. Wiley taped it up, and it works just fine. In Oakwood, Texas, I'm Kate Archer-Kent for Marketplace.
We keep hearing it's a great time to buy stocks. But our friend Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine tells me, no, it's a great time to think about buying stocks.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Okay, Alan, what are your guidelines for getting into the market right now?
Well, the first guideline is you shouldn't have any credit card debt because credit cards are much more expensive than you're ever going to earn in stocks. The second thing is your financial life needs to be under some sort of control. And the thing to do is to nibble, and I stress the word nibble, at, say, a Standard & Poor's 500 index fund or a total U.S. stock market fund because you diversify your investment rather than being in one company, which, as we've seen, can go from a lot to nothing. That would be how to do it if you want to own stocks and you don't know how to buy them. That's how you would buy them.
And what's my time frame? How far out should I be thinking about?
You should be thinking of holding the stuff for at least 6 years, maybe longer. Let's take Warren Buffett. I mean, you've heard of Warren Buffett?
Yeah.
He's supposed to be good at picking stocks. Last month, Warren Buffett published a really interesting piece in the New York Times. He said, I am buying U.S. stocks. And when he said that, the S&P 500 was considerably higher than it is now. And in fact, shortly after he said it, the S&P fell almost 20%. You know, he wasn't trying to time the market. He was giving you long-term advice on the assumption that you have both the ability and the stomach to sit there and ride out things.
And I guess you're also suggesting people keep their expectations kind of low on the return end of this?
I would do that. Now, people in my generation, I'm 64, we grew up in a market that ran from 1982 to 2000 that returned on average 20% a year in the S&P compounded. Hmm. We are not going to see that again. But finally, stocks are at a point where I suspect in 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years, you'll look back and say, gee, I really did a lot better owning this than I would have owning treasury bonds or money market funds or stuff like that. At least that's how I'm betting my personal portfolio. So I hope to heaven it's right. Otherwise, Scott, I may have to come out and live in your basement.
All right, Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan. Thanks as always.
You're welcome.
Share your thoughts with us at our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and have a great Monday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.